From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Some 11 million people, migrants, live and work across this country illegally. Boy, are they a hot topic in this campaign season. And Arizona is arguably ground zero for that debate, a 370-mile border with Mexico. A recent history of get-tough policies and realities that have driven undocumented worker numbers down by a whopping 40%. What happens when they go away? This hour on Point, undocumented workers, the Arizona story, and what happens to the economy when they go away. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What would it mean for the U.S. economy, for you, if millions of undocumented workers were actually sent away, gone? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. First step, Donald Trump has said all through, and again last Saturday, build a wall.
I will build a wall. I will build a wall. Remember this, the wall will be paid for by Mexico. We are not being treated right. We are not being treated properly. If we don't have borders, if we don't have strength, we don't have a country.
He's not the only one going hard on this. Ted Cruz with a little humor here in another Republican debate as well.
If I'm elected president, we will secure the border. We will triple the Border Patrol. We will build a wall that works, and I'll get Donald Trump to pay for it.
Donald Trump says Mexico will pay for it. Donald Trump says millions would be deported. He won't say quite how, but they've got to go. They've got to go. Ted Cruz hasn't said whether he would do that or not. Implication that he might, sort of indicated that he would. This is hot in the GOP. Famous sheriff out of Maricopa County in Phoenix, Joe Arpaio, the guy who has been so hard on immigrants there in all kinds of ways, including, a decade back, he marched nearly 700 prisoners four blocks through the city in pink underwear and flip-flops just to make a point. Here he was in Iowa before the caucuses there endorsing Donald Trump.
I met Donald 6 months ago in Phoenix. And it's my privilege and honor to help him, to endorse him today for President of the United States. Everything I believe in, he's doing, and he's going to do it when he becomes president.
Joe Arpaio, the man who likes to call himself America's toughest sheriff, out of Maricopa County, Phoenix, Arizona. So what does it mean when the numbers really go down between the economy and tough measures? Arizona's undocumented workers are down 40%. That's a big number. Joining me first today from Washington is Bob Davis, senior editor at the Wall Street Journal. He has gone very deep reporting on Arizona's experience. Bob Davis, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
This is a remarkable and deep piece of reporting that you've done. Can we just start with the numbers? How did the numbers come down by 40%? That's huge.
It is a remarkable decline. It's a combination of things. First is the anti-immigration measures that have been passed. There was one particularly that required employers to look at databases of Social Security numbers and
E-verify.
Other databases.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, called E-Verify. And if you don't pass, you're not supposed to get a job. And then there was another provision called SB 1070 that looked specifically at immigrants and allowed police to check papers and so on. Some of that was thrown out by the Supreme Court. And then overlaid on that, you had a recession. But I think it's not just a coincidence. To get 40% of the undocumented population to leave, I think you need both.
So it's down, and it's down since what? Since the recession? Since this 40% reduction over what period?
Since 2007, since right before the recession.
Now, we should say that numbers coming in from Mexico overall are way down as well. And Arizona is not the only state where the illegal immigrant population is down. New York's is down 25%, Illinois down 13%, California down 12%, Florida almost 12%, U.S. overall down 8%. But a 40% drop is so stark, so big, that you ought to be able to look in there and see, well, what does that mean for an economy? You did that, Bob. How did you go at answering that question, and what did you find?
Well, I mean, I tried to look at what would happen, as I said, just as you said, just economically. I put aside all the sort of questions of morality, nationalism, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do, what you find is that overall, when you look at the state output, the state GDP, that goes down. And if you think about it, it's pretty logical. You've lost 40% of the population of that population. That's 200,000 people who are working. They may be in low-paying jobs, but they're still working. They're producing economic activity. They're buying homes. They're buying groceries. And so you lose them, and you lose that activity. On the other hand, there are some people that compete directly with illegal immigrants, particularly in the construction industry. And the question then is, do those people benefit because there's less competition, basically?
What industries had the most undocumented labor in Arizona?
Construction and agriculture.
And are those big deals? Obviously, they must be. I mean, Arizona's been a growth state. I don't know about agriculture. What's the size of ag there?
Agriculture, it's not one of the biggest industries. A lot of that's gone to Mexico, actually. But construction was huge. Arizona had one of the biggest housing booms in a nation that, you know, before the recession was marked by a housing boom. So they played a gigantic role in that industry.
So I know it's hard to sort all this out. The recession came in and probably stopped home building in its tracks for a while. But can you tease out when you took the, you know, and we can all remember from all over the country, not just remember even now, but like undocumented workers hanging out in Home Depot parking lots ready for day labor and all kinds of contractors hiring all kinds of status people. When you take a big chunk of them out, what did it mean for the construction industry? Were there more jobs for American citizens there, and were wages higher without the undocumented?
Well, this is where it gets really difficult, and this is where, as a reporter, you depend on economists who are better able to, you know, control for one factor or another factor. I mean, clearly the recession had a big part of what was going on. As best anyone can tell, in 2008 and 2009, which were peak years of the recession, and in addition was when that E-Verify law came into effect, mm-hmm. 200,000 people left, about half of them left because of the recession, about half of them left because of the anti-immigration measures. So what happened to the people left behind, the legal immigrants and the natives, is, again, as best one can tell, their employment rate went down also, probably partially the recession, partially, again, the lack of economic activity from those illegal immigrants. And those people who did have a job, though, their wages went up somewhat.
Substantially? Did these become much better paying jobs because such a big piece, a chunk of undocumented workers were taken away?
I wouldn't say substantially. As best you can see, it was about 6%. That you could attribute to the immigrants leaving particularly. The problem was you had a recession going on at the same time. So mm-hmm. you had fewer workers. If you're a native worker, you had fewer competitors. That's a plus. But you had way fewer jobs, and that's a big minus.
GDP down, so the overall size of the economy, take that many people out, I guess that just stands to reason. But it could still, I suppose, be better for individuals. What about for businesses? Businesses have often been not wanting to crack down so hard. I mean, you talk with Jeremy Barbosa. He heads up a company called Precise Drywall. And he says, you know, it used to be he had a phone book with 300 or 400 guys' numbers to fill out crews to put up drywall in Arizona. Once all these undocumented workers went away, he had kind of a dry well there.
Right. I mean, now, so we were talking about recession years. So now let's talk about the years after the recession, mm-hmm. The last couple of years. Well, all of a sudden, the construction industry is, you know, having something of a comeback in Arizona. But the immigrants aren't coming back. Why they aren't coming back is a matter of conjecture. But part of it certainly has to be the remaining very tough restrictions on immigration in Arizona. And what happens as a result is there's a labor shortage in the construction field. So that is for workers now. That is definitely a plus because you get much bigger raises than that 6% that I was talking about during the recession.
Yep.
On the minus side for the economy as a whole, the recovery in construction is less dynamic than it would be because there are fewer houses being built.
And you quote the head of the drywall company saying growth is based on the ability to hire, and he just doesn't have the same labor pool to draw from.
Right. I mean, the hope had been that natives and legal immigrants would fill the gap. It doesn't seem that that's the case. They aren't trained, and that goes to a whole different issues of the state and the country's inability to retrain people in any effective fashion.
You talk with a farm owner named Rob Knorr. He had a lot of Mexican field hands picking peppers and breaking, taking the stems off of them so it could go into salsa and all the rest. What happened to that labor pool as the undocumented declined so markedly in Arizona?
Well, it basically disappeared. Knorr was a very interesting guy because he actually was a guy who would come down to Arizona for the summer as a snowbird, basically, from North Dakota, who farmed wheat in North Dakota. So he was used to, you know, a handful of people doing a tremendous amount of harvesting. So he gets to Arizona, and you're exactly in the opposite situation. He's dependent enormously on unskilled labor from Mexico. He doesn't get it, and now he's been working for years in trying to develop a automated stem picker. Sounds kind of funny, but it's actually hard to do.
Using laser beams, machinery to take the stems off those chili peppers, he's not, in the end, hiring American citizens to step in and do that stoop labor of picking and taking off the stems.
Right. I mean, what the usual response is, well, sure, I mean, you know, there may not be native labor to step in, but if you'd only raise the rates, you'll find people eventually. I mean, there's certainly some logic to that, but the restraining factor in that one is peppers or whatever the field is are internationally competitive, and there's only a certain price you can charge for a pepper.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what happens when undocumented workers are taken out of the American economy. Build a wall, move people out. Then what? And we're looking in particular at the Arizona story, the Arizona experience. Numbers of undocumented workers down a very sharp 40% there in the last half dozen or so years. Bob Davis has gone deep on what that has meant for the Arizona economy, and it's cut a couple of different ways. It's very interesting to look at. He is with us from the Journal out of Washington today. You can join us. How do you picture the U.S. economy without undocumented workers or with many fewer? What do you make of the Arizona story? A 40% reduction, and how do you hear the consequences? Employers, who would trim the grass, swing the hammer, pick the beans, clean the rooms? Would your neighbors step in to do those jobs? At what wage would robots end up doing them? Machines, combination of recession and very tough laws and policing have driven those undocumented numbers down in Arizona. Here's a little unedited video from ABC News. They followed a Sergeant Manny Madrid in Maricopa County, Arizona, where Joe Opio is the tough sheriff, explaining here, Sergeant Madrid, how they check illegal immigrants, the way they do it, stop cars for minor traffic violations, use that opportunity to check their papers.
He was pulled over for a traffic violation, and the deputies that just showed up now are going to screen the individuals inside of their status to be in the country.
Tough in all kinds of ways. His sheriff, Joe Arpaio, had the nation's first female and juvenile chain gangs, boasts that he's taken every comfort out of county jails. No basketball, coffee, salt, pepper, movies. Cheapest prisoner meals in the U.S., 15 cents a meal and just two a day, and on and on. He's endorsed Donald Trump in Iowa last month. Here was Trump.
Well, I want to thank Sheriff Joe. This is a man, when we talk about borders, this is a man that believes in borders, and getting his endorsement means a lot to me. And he called and he said he'd like to do it.
Of course, it's not just Donald Trump talking about being tough. Here was a Marco Rubio in the most recent debate.
People have lost trust in the federal government. It is now clear that the only way to make progress on immigration is not just to pass a law that enforces the law, but actually prove to people that it's working. They want to see the wall built. They want to see the additional border agents. They want to see E-Verify. They want to see an entry-exit tracking system.
And on it goes. Lots and lots of talk, big claims. Who knows what would actually be done? A lot of Americans wondering, okay, what would the consequences be? That's what Bob Davis is looking at in Arizona. A couple of economists will join us in just a moment, Magnus Lofstrom and Stephen Camerata, with their take on what the Arizona lesson is. Bob, you guys brought in Moody's to look at some of the consequences of this change in population. The chief economist there, Mark Zandi, you quote, calling the lessons of Arizona sobering. Why?
Well, what they found was that the size of the GDP was 2% smaller each year since 2008. The size of the labor force or the employment rate was 2.5% lower. So those are big hits to the economy. And in addition, what they found is that of the jobs vacated by illegal immigrants, only maybe 10% of them were filled by either natives or illegal immigrants. So the plus side, in theory, the plus side of getting rid of so many undocumented workers didn't bear out.
There were cost savings here to the state when it came to medical care, when it came to education in particular. Can you describe those?
Yes. I mean, so the having undocumented workers and their families in the country usually come in usually produce three big expenses. One is education. The other one is emergency room care because they don't get state maintenance sort of care, but emergency room care and prison expenses. So with education, the numbers go way down, although you have to kind of figure, there's a debate as to how to consider education. So are the children of illegal immigrants, they're American citizens. Should we count them as a cost of immigration? The people who are sympathetic to illegal immigration say, no, that's not fair. The people who want to restrict that sort of immigration says, sure, of course we should count that because they wouldn't be in the country, you know, without their parents having come illegally. So if you count that, I mean, you have hundreds of millions of dollars worth of savings. However, what I wasn't able to do, unfortunately, was figure out the taxes that those illegal immigrants would have paid as well.
Which would offset some of that cost, you're suggesting?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, So even if they don't pay income tax to the levels that they should, they pay, you know, sales tax and, you know, other sorts of taxes that people can't avoid. And I just couldn't figure out a reasonable way of coming up with a calculation for that revenue.
So net, is Arizona better off and Arizonans or not?
I think it's clear overall they're worse off. The issue is that worth it to be worse off overall if you benefit a certain class of people, low-skilled people who've had the hardest time in this economy? That's the fundamental value choice there.
I want to bring our economist in, a couple of callers first. Waterford, Pennsylvania, Dolores is calling. Hi, Dolores, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you.
Okay, the area which I grew up in and still reside currently is we have a large number of fruit farms, vineyards, and used to be a lot of dairy farms as well.
Yep.
Okay, when I was a kid growing up, I mean, right now I'm 62, so this is many moons ago.
Okay.
When I was a kid growing up, all high school kids worked in these farms, worked in the orchards.
Me too.
Okay?
Yep.
Fast forward, I left, went to college, joined the Army, was gone for 20-some years, returned, and when you go to these orchards now in the vineyards, and I have relatives who still farm, all you see is people south of the border. I have friends who are landscapers, and they will tell you if you want people who are going to work 50, 60 hours a week, it's going to be the Hispanics, people south of the border. You know, and I've heard the interviews from the orchard growers in eastern Washington, the guys who own construction companies in Wyoming, to the guys here, and they're saying, I'm telling you, there's a lot of people out there who don't want to work.
What about 40 hours a week, you know, and a decent wage? Would that do it? Would that bring people out to cut the grass and pick
Tom,
yeah?
I'm going to tell you, I also retired from the U.S. Postal Service.
Yeah.
We couldn't get people to come to work for $24 an hour. Okay? My sister is a production manager at a food processing facility that provides a lot of products to the big companies, General Mills, Kellogg's.
Yep.
They make pretty decent wages. People don't want to come to work.
Dolores, we've got it. Let me get one more, and I'll take it to our economist. Dave, thank you, Dolores. Dave in Menominee, Michigan. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. You know, I think the bigger problem, besides hiring people who may not be citizens of the United States, are... I think the bigger criminal are the employers. Why aren't we cracking down on these employers? Why aren't we jailing these employers? These are the people who are drawing people from the South to come and work.
Yeah.
If we crack down on these employers and force them to actually pay a wage, because remember, this is all about greed. These people are exploiting these workers. And I think we need to cut into their, they created their own wealth exploiting these workers.
Dave, I hear you, but speak to Dolores in Pennsylvania just now, who says you can pay whatever you want. Americans these days aren't going to do some of this sweaty, tough labor.
I do not believe that.
Yeah.
You know, I live in the in upper Michigan.
Yeah.
So we're far from the South, but that is just almost alien to me, to think that you could offer $24 an hour and people just won't come to work. I think that's more of a story than actual reality.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a head slapper. I mean, it's Dolores' experience, but still, it is kind of amazing if it's true. Dave, I appreciate your call. Let me bring in a couple of the economists that Bob Davis with the Wall Street Journal has spoken with for his really good story on Arizona's experience when its undocumented worker population went way down. And by the way, you can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. It is really worth a read. With us right now from San Francisco is Magnus Lofstrom, labor economist, senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California, nonpartisan think tank there, former professor of economics at the University of Texas at Dallas. Magnus Lofstrom, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. And with us from Washington, another of those Bob Davis has consulted, Stephen Camerota, director of research at the Center for Immigration Studies, an outfit that is not pro-immigration, that's for sure. Stephen Camerota, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me back.
Magnus, first to you. Can you as an economist look at this and say, overall, good or bad idea to cut way back on the undocumented worker population in economic terms?
Well, I think it's actually what we should do is take a step back. And we're talking here a lot about the 40% drop in unauthorized population in Arizona.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to point out that that drop, a big part of that, and Bob did that, a big part of that is actually driven by the recession, the very, very severe recession.
We acknowledge that. We totally acknowledge that.
So it's more, you know, we looked at Arizona and we looked at first and, well, what did these, you know, strict E-Verify mandate do? And it reduced the unauthorized population by about 17%. And then I think it's important. Okay, that's a 17% drop. That's a very significant number.
I mean, apart from the recession's effects. But the reason we're going with the bigger number is that Donald Trump is talking about a 100% deportation.
Right.
So we're trying to, whatever the cause, we're trying to imagine what's the impact of a big reduction, hypothetically, if one were to do it.
If one were to do that. Well, I think from the research, what we see there is that, well, and it fits perfectly with the story that Bob is telling. You know, it reduced employment opportunities, no surprise for the unauthorized population. But it also reduced employment for the workers that the laws intended to help. Those are low-skilled, native-born workers.
Why?
So the employment numbers went down. Because what happens, and Bob points this out in the story as well, is that with the challenges now of finding these workers, and there are challenges to find workers who have the willingness and the ability to do some of these very hard work. What they have to do is they have to look for an alternative strategy then to produce the goods and services that they're involved with. And they have to look for alternative, technologies. For example, the farmer then is using a different technology, but he's cutting down on how much he's producing. And then when he's hiring other workers, sure, he's using less of them, but he has to pay them more. So for that worker who's now getting that job, he's clearly better off. But we also saw that the economy shrunk as a result of that. And the effect, the negative effect, is going to be the toughest early on. So the short-term negative consequences are probably very, very noticeable if we did something like this. Producers, firms will adjust eventually, but overall, I think that there are some very noticeable negative consequences, economic consequences,
of course,
from a severe drawdown.
They may adjust with machines, not with people. Stephen Camerota, how about it? That this could end up hurting, Magnus says, the very class of Americans that it's supposed to help, the low-skilled workers who would hypothetically be competing with undocumented workers.
Well, I think if we take a step back and we think about this immigration, we should think about the winners and the losers. And the winners appear to be the unskilled who do better. So I think Magnus and I disagree on that. Most of the research suggests that illegal immigrants, as you might expect, compete with less educated Americans. Illegal immigrants are estimated to have about a 10th grade education on average. We know that workers with no more than a high school education have seen their wages and employment rates decline in Arizona and elsewhere. And if we had a lower supply of labor, so obviously, we can't deport everyone overnight. If we just enforced the law and began to reduce the population over time, the general trend would be for their wages to rise. We always hear
the same
thing.
But we've just heard a subtle, sophisticated argument that does not come to that conclusion. Address that argument. You're
right,
asserting that they would rise, but we want to hear the argument.
Right. The argument is very simple. If you reduce the supply of workers, employers will have to begin to recruit them and pay more.
Did not happen in Arizona.
Let me give you an example.
Did not happen.
Right. I think that's a mistake. The evidence looks like there was an increase in wages to some extent in Arizona, and you might have to give it more time. Obviously, employers are very used to paying more wages. What we don't really have is great data on wages in Arizona. The current population survey is small. The American Community Survey doesn't really capture hourly wages very well. So it is hard to say. What we can say is certain other benefits seem to have accrued. For example, nationally, the number of immigrants in poverty and their children grew over the 2008 to 2012 period by something like 30%. But because Arizona was encouraging all these low-skilled immigrants to leave, it only grew by 13% in Arizona, despite the fact that the state was hard hit. So one of the benefits to the state is a much smaller low-income population. And as we all know, that people with relatively modest levels of education don't make high wages. They tend to pay relatively little in taxes, but they and their children often use a lot in social services. So that, I think, is another area of the winners. The taxpayers of Arizona are the winners. Yes, illegal immigrants pay taxes. We think that, in fact, about 55% of illegal immigrants are paid on the books. But if we go back to that educational attainment, 10th grade education on average, those kinds of workers never pay enough in taxes to cover their consumption of public services. Encouraging them to leave the state is a nice savings for taxpayers. The thing we get confused about is, yes, GDP is smaller if workers leave. Magnus and I think we disagree. There's no evidence that per capita GDP is lower in Arizona. Yes, per capita income took a hit in Arizona, but it took a hit everywhere. And there's no evidence that a departure of illegals was a problem in terms of lowering the overall income of the native-born population of Arizona. In fact, there's some anecdotal and a little bit of systematic evidence that wages went up at the bottom, and the Wall Street Journal did report on that.
Yeah,
so
let me put that to Magnus, if I may, Stephen. Magnus, what about a per capita GDP? Okay, economy a little bit smaller, but per capita, for the people who are there, better off?
Well, I think Steve is right in the sense that we don't know what the per capita impact on GDP was in Arizona. I think it is the evidence suggests that the GDP did shrink, and Steve acknowledges that.
But Donald Trump might say, but it'll be better for each of the people who remain.
Well, I think that's not really what we see in the data. So another thing that I agree with Steve is that, the data sources that we have to analyze these kind of questions, they're pretty small sample. It's a pretty small state. Yeah. But we actually looked at Arizona, and we used the CPS, the Current Population Survey, in our analysis to really identify what the E-Verify mandate did. And we found a statistically significant drop in the employment rate of low-skilled white native-born workers of about 4 percentage points. So the data does show that there are fewer jobs available for that group. But it also shows, and I think it's important to point out, that among those who did find a job afterwards, their wages went up. It is, as Bob pointed out, among those who did find jobs, there was a 6% increase in earnings.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Whether your passion is bold, unconventional, or just plain crazy, you should share it with the world in an unforgettable way. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what happens when undocumented workers are taken out of the American economy. Build a wall, move people out, maybe, then what? And we're looking in particular at the Arizona story, the Arizona experience. Bob Davis, senior editor at the Wall Street Journal, has gone deep on Arizona. A 40% drop in undocumented numbers there just in the last handful of years. Combination of the recession and very tough policies on the undocumented there. And it's gone way down. Now on the campaign trail, we've got Donald Trump saying he'd not only build a wall, he would ship out lots and lots of people. What do you think? What does the Arizona story tell you about what that might mean for the overall economy in this country? How do you read the lesson there? Magnus Lofstrom is with us from the Public Policy Institute of California. Stephen Camerata is with us from the Center for Immigration Studies, economists who have been looking at this. Of course, on the campaign trail, bring the Democrats in and some Republicans as well. And people saying, look, this mass deportation is never going to happen. What are you going to do? Hillary Clinton asked last year. Ship them out in boxcars?
I find it the height of irony that a party which espouses small government would want to unleash a massive law enforcement effort, including perhaps National Guard and others, to go and literally pull people out of their homes and their workplaces, round them up, put them, I don't know, in buses, boxcars.
But this remains a very hot, combustible issue. Here's Marco Rubio in the GOP debate just last Saturday.
I think there has to be consequences for violating our immigration laws. What I think is clear about this issue to begin with is we're not going to be able to make progress on illegal immigration until first illegal immigration is brought under control.
And here, John Kasich.
I'm for seal on the border, okay? And then I'm for a guest worker program. People can come in, work, and go back home. Then we have 11.5 million people here. If they have not committed a crime since they've been here, make them pay a fine and some back taxes and give them a path to legalization, never to citizenship.
11.5 million people here. What does that mean? What would it mean, depending how they're treated? John's calling from Framingham, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you see?
I just wanted to take it from a Massachusetts standpoint.
Okay.
And I'm a contractor in Massachusetts, and I've competed on a daily basis with contractors who hire illegal aliens, and it has really affected my business. I have four people who work for me, and I cannot compete with $9 an hour to get a carpet. And this is a very visceral issue in the building trades, referencing working poor people. And I'm a huge fan of your show. I watch it. I listen to it every day. And I just find it's a working poor people issue.
Yeah.
If you're a working poor legal American, you are truly affected by illegal immigration.
Yeah.
Especially in Massachusetts. Massachusetts is
well. I mean, I don't know why. Especially, tiny. I mean, all over the place. That dynamic we can understand, and you say you've seen it as a contractor firsthand, and it raises the issue of how do you compete if others are hiring undocumented and you're not. Decisions have to be made. John, I appreciate your call. We had caller Jim out of Iowa saying, "Look, he worked in Arizona, and then he could no longer do it because his pay rate was being undercut." Magnus, that listener was saying, Americans, if we should cut back on the undocumented labor force, are going to have to get used to paying more for things, paying more for homes, paying more for products, maybe agricultural products, where their labor has become a part of our economy.
I think that's right. That is what we would expect. We by removing that part of the workforce, the production of goods and services will be more expensive, and we would have to pay for that. I think part of this, when we think about solutions to it, maybe we should shift our focus to looking at the demand side of this. Most unauthorized immigrants who come to the U.S. come here for job opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
We did implement in 1986 through the Immigration Reform and Control Act laws that made it illegal to hire unauthorized workers. But we haven't enforced those laws. So we haven't really targeted employers and enforced them with fines, making it pretty easy to continue to hire and rely on these workers. And, you know, that is part of the problem that we're facing today.
So is there a moral argument there then that says, okay, GDP goes down a little, but you've got to take care of this class of American workers who otherwise are up against it?
Right. I mean, I think
Stephen?
I think that's right. I mean, we have a record number of people without a high school education and only a high school education who are of working age, under age 65, not working. It's about 27 million. Their real wages are down 10 to 20% in sectors where immigrants are heavily concentrated, like, say, meat and poultry processing, which has been well studied. Real wages are 45% less today than they were in 1980, as the immigrants have become a very large fraction, though it's still the case that the majority of workers there are native born. Now, those same employers come back to the public and to Congress, say, hey, we can't find anybody. And they don't mention that they pay 45% less than they used to. When I was a kid and worked on a farm, I made $7 an hour. That would adjust for inflation to about $15 an hour, $16 an hour today. Farm jobs generally don't pay anywhere near that in New Jersey, where I grew up now. Real wages at the bottom end of the U.S. labor market have declined significantly long term. There's no wage growth in the last 10 years at all. They fell a lot, and there's no wage growth down there. If we had less immigration, allowed fewer unskilled immigrants into the United States over time, we would expect that wages would increase. In terms of the prices of commodities, this also has been well studied, and it would have almost no impact on consumer prices because the bottom end of the labor market is only a tiny fraction of GDP. The poorest 10% of workers account for like 3% of output. The poorest 20% of workers account for like 6, 7% of output. If wages were allowed to rise 50% in agriculture, which is not where most illegal immigrants work, but let's just talk about it. It looks like it could have an impact on consumer prices of about 6%, or 3%, I should say, because when you buy a head of lettuce at the store, only about 6% of it is the cost of the guy who actually picked it. Most of the cost of lettuce is transportation and land and herbicides and pesticides.
And what about when you're focused on one big purchase like a home, let's say, a newly built home?
Well, there, right, the unskilled labor is still only a small part. Usually it's land and the design and the materials and the more skilled labor that determines the price of a house and other things like the market. They're obviously be very sensitive to, you know, real estate pressures, but not the guys who just put up the drywall and put up the sticks for the framing. That's not what determines the price. Bottom line is we can let wages rise for the poor a lot in this country, secure in the knowledge that the impact on consumer prices will be virtually trivial.
Well, Bob Davis, I was kind of blown away. We did a show recently on housing and what's going on there. And we had people telling us that they were having trouble finding skilled carpenters just to build homes. I didn't think that we had seen that kind of attrition of American skill levels in something like carpentry, Bob. Does Arizona tell us anything about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think the question... What Steve says is, in theory, you know, absolutely right. I mean, but there is this enormous problem in the U.S. of training unskilled workers. We have lost. I mean, the people coming from Mexico aren't coming just, you know, because they think that there might be jobs. They're coming because there's a lack of skills. There's a lack of skills among the native population. So
in the USA, you're saying?
Yeah. So should high schools and community colleges be focusing on more on the construction trade? Yeah, they should, but they aren't. We're paying for, you know, our inability to train low-skilled workers. I mean, that's what we're paying for.
Let's go to Jose in Marietta, Georgia. Jose, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I got a question for the wall builders. Are you going to stop manufacturing companies from going across that wall down to Mexico to get cheaper labor, more plentiful labor?
And what's your point? You mean that the U.S. should let workers come to this country because if they don't, the jobs will go to them?
I'm just saying I was reading about air conditioning companies in the news lately that are already relocating to Mexico, their plants.
Yep.
That's already happening. So I'm just saying, I don't see how we can be crying about losing more manufacturing jobs to Mexico because they have a plentiful workforce down there willing to work cheap and long hours, cheaper than over here. So, I just see manufacturing chasing them across the border, and that wall ain't going to stop them.
Jose, we've got it, and I really appreciate your call. Bob Davis, you know Donald Trump raised this carrier, has announced it's going to move AC manufacturing to Mexico, and Trump said, look, he would sit down, and I guess the suggestion was that he would browbeat them in, or threaten them into not doing that. But Jose says, you know, raise the wages here, stop the workers from coming in here, and the jobs will just go there. What about that argument in the Arizona story, Bob?
There's a lot of similarities between the issue and the arguments over immigration and the arguments over free trade. Trump is frankly talking out of his hat. I mean, if he was to go and pressure carrier not to, you know, not to move across the border, okay, fine. So is he going to do that with every single company that's thinking of moving across the border? No. And what about companies that move back? Because there is, we have now, for better or worse, I think it's generally for better, we have an integrated market in North America. I mean, it's just, you know, it's like Trump all of a sudden woke up to NAFTA. Well, it's been around for quite some time, and you know, there is the free flow of materials and supplies in both ends of the border. So if you somehow, I mean, as Trump talks about putting like a 35% tariff on it, and you stop supplies coming in the air conditioning and the car market from Mexico to the U.S., you know what would happen? With just-in-time manufacturing, you would stop all production in those industries in the U.S. as well. It sounds great, you know, to people who are worried about jobs going overseas, but it's totally, totally unrealistic.
Ron, can I jump in here? Oh, yes, please, Magnus.
Yeah, just very, very briefly, this is Steve.
Oh, sorry.
Look, about 75% of the U.S. economy, remember, is domestically produced for domestic consumption. Manufacturing employment is only about 9%. The vast majority of unskilled and less educated Americans, the people that have really taken it on the chin, are employed in the services. They're employed in construction. And the only way they face international competition, for the most part, there are exceptions, is through immigration.
Yeah, yeah.
So trade is different. The other thing about immigration that's very different from trade is that immigration of unskilled people creates very large fiscal costs. If you import an air conditioner from Mexico, you don't have to educate it. There's no welfare. It's not qualified for food stamps. A worker who works at a low wage and their children do qualify for those kinds of things. So trade is a different question.
Steve, we've got it. There are others lined up here. Let me go to Ron in Savannah, Georgia. Ron, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Love your show. 3 points. Donald Trump is an idiot. If you think you're going to move 11 million people out of this country, you're crazy. That's the equivalent of moving everybody in the state of Georgia, everybody in the state of South Carolina out. It's going to cause an effect. As far as the labor, anybody that says that you can't find people to work for $24 an hour is smoking crack. It's that simple. I know people right here in Savannah, Georgia, that will work for $24 an hour 7 days a week without a break. Don't get me started.
Ron, hold your thought. Let me ask you something. I've got an email right here from perhaps a fellow South Carolinian of yours living on Hilton Head. Nice address, year-round, and says, look, undocumented workers do almost all the work here. They build the homes, paint it, repair them. They smooth the golf courses for tea times. They prepare the restaurant meals, undocumented. Clean the hotels, care for children, care for the elderly. You know, it says that there's no one else here to do the work. They're skilled and dedicated, and this is just the way it is. That's from a fellow South Carolinian. What do you say, Ron?
Let's go back in our history of this great country. We had slavery in this country up until 1865, and if you extend it into the late 60s, you'll understand when I make this next statement. If you got people that will work for free under the lash, literally for nothing, guess what you're going to have in your future?
Yeah.
Nothing. People from south of the border are the hardest working people on this planet. For someone to sit here and say American are lazy, I don't even buy that. Black folk built this country for free. You can't have it both ways.
Yep.
You've got to pay people a living wage. It's that simple. For the most part, black folks aren't going to work in the fields because they did it already. They know. I venture to ask anyone that's done this type that says anything like that, go pick cotton for one 15-minute segment. It'll close all that down.
Ron, we've got it. You make a very important point there. I want to get one more caller. I'm really glad for your call. Camden, Isaac, you're on the air, Isaac.
Hey, Tom, how are you? Thank you for having me on. Love the show.
Thank you.
I'm actually really glad that the last caller made the point that he did. Growing up in South Carolina, being Mexican-American myself, I've seen it, man. You know, I'm out here working right now outside doing a job that, you know, black folk won't come out and do. You know, immigrants aren't coming out and saying, I want $15 minimum wage. No, we go to work. And we're happy and thankful for it.
What happens if Donald Trump sends millions of people back to Mexico, in your perspective, Isaac?
It's not going to happen. It just goes to show you how out of touch Trump is. First of all, look at what you said. You're sending 11 million immigrants back to Mexico. What makes you think all 11 million are Mexicans? Let's talk about my Irish friend
who got his
green card last week.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the fact that Mexican-Americans are getting blamed for all this. When, for one, it's Hispanic-Americans, it's Hondurans, it's Guatemalans, Brazilians, Chileans. It's all the people from Latin America. And seriously, to say something is stupid, especially someone like Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio, whose parents came over on boats from Cuba, then to say, oh, just build a wall. It just goes to show you how out of touch people are. It's not the wetback mentality. It's not the mojados. It's not the fence jumpers. It's people that get here and get stuff done.
Isaac, I appreciate your call. I've got 1 minute, and I've got to take it right there. Bob Davis, you've done all this detailed reporting, and Magnus Lofstrom and Stephen Camerata will lay it out in detail for us. When it goes to the political debate, Bob, do the details matter, or does it get reduced to an emotional appeal?
Well, we're playing on emotion at the moment, but that's what my goal in writing the article was, to put some numbers and some rationality into the debate and to have people try to understand better what's involved.
Well, I think you did a terrific job with that, and I really encourage our listeners to go to the website linked to Bob Davis's story from the Wall Street Journal, The Thorny Economics of Illegal Immigration. You'll find the headline there. Bob Davis, senior editor at the Wall Street Journal in Washington, thank you so much for being with us today, Bob.
Thank you.
Magnus Lofstrom at the Public Policy Institute of California, thank you for joining us, Magnus.
Thank you.
And Stephen Camerata, the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, thanks so much for coming on, Stephen.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. All your calls, all your thoughts, as always. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.